one over. Beginning of the session with Rick and Debbie this Wednesday after supper, the 21st of March, 73. 10-1 over. And the beginning of the session with Rick and Debbie this Wednesday after supper, the 21st of March, 73. Channel 1 over. And beginning of the session with Rick and Debbie this Wednesday after supper, the 21st of March, 73.
I just said it was. I had three sweaters on and I'm still chilly, but I don't want fire. That's all I was saying.
Well, I didn't realize it that turned that cold or chilly.
Kind of damp, I think.
And mosquitoes out. That's a sure sign. Some rain or something.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We made a few telephone calls.
Everett.
His voice is just the same. And Rick can tell you that I didn't have to do a thing but hold the receiver.
And hold it away from your ear.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And he sounded just the same. I got him off the hospital, and he got to that cow. He got a bull.
He got a bull.
And he was going to let that go. He saw $500. Get that for beef, he said. He said, over there, towards Cross Creek at that, where the Guthrie, old man Guthrie lived, 400 or 500 acres over there, 400 or 500 acres over there. They wanted the bull. Well, that's partly what they went over to see Everett about, his health and also his bull. Cedric wanted him, but he just offered him 400. That's what he used to pay him, and he's told Cedric. I know Cedric. He's a traitor. But he said he's not the only one. He says, do you ever hear of M.M. Mixon? He's a traitor too. And you see, we were just taking hold.
Mm-hmm.
Just taking hold. And all we needed was just some victuals to sit down to, and Everett can talk and eat without missing a bite or a word, can't he? Mm-hmm.
Only person I ever knew.
Perfectly. But perfect he is.
You don't have to turn the evening news on whenever it's here.
Oh, no. You go right through it. Brother Carter?
Yes. I got an old work. I said, how are you working? Oh, I'm not much good. Haven't had a good race in 2 weeks. It's been too dry, and now it's too wet. But they came on back up the road not too long ago, and the fellow said, you know, I saw a cat cross this road. He said, well, let's put him out and see what we can get. So they put the dogs out, and he said, that's the slickest cat I've seen. I don't think we've run him before. He's too big. But he took off in through the woods, around, then he hit the road, went 300-400 yards. Said about the time the dogs would find out what he'd done and get on his track, he'd hit the road again. And he kept doing that till he lost them. He says, nah, I just don't know. A cat hadn't been run before. But he said right now, he didn't think there'd be any good fox hunting up until September because the the she-fox have got little ones, and he says you can't run them. You just can't run them. And if you do run, when the little ones start getting kind of big and they get up size about a house cat, he says, they're still not quite big enough to run. They'll just go a short pace like you're running a rabbit. And then climb a tree or go in a hole. So he said it might be up to September. But said I ought to go ask Mac. He'd know. So I said, I'll do that. I'll get in touch with Mac, and then I'll come down and talk to you about it. Either Mac or Emma keep one. They ought to know.
Now, you didn't talk to Tuck himself.
No, I talked to his wife.
Yeah.
And she said Tuck's been doing right fine.
Mm.
I said, well, we've been stuck over this place. Cows are keeping us here. And she said, well, we've had a time with ours. We have to go visit them at least once a week, let them know we still think about them.
Yeah.
And they're putting out those licks, those molasses licks. And I said, well, one of those will carry you through the winter. Oh, no. We've gone through, and she counted up and said about 7.5 of them now. And they're expensive.
Oh, yeah.
I said, well, you know, we just barely made it on the hay. And she said, yeah, LRU's the last bale. The calyx and the hay, and now they're feeding them a little bit of pellets with the grass in the back. She sounded a little surprised to hear me. Didn't quite know who I was, and then Ms. Van Arnum had said they'd been up to Swanee to see Carla in a play or something. So, but it just picked right up, and we got to chatting, laughing.
Yeah.
She's kind of light. She gets going if she doesn't have Tuck to watch over, I guess.
All right.
I was surprised.
She goes to town on Saturday.
Hmm.
And if you get out there, you see when she's not there, it was a machine. Talk to her fair. But I'm that's too much effort for me. But I sure do hate to miss it. We don't have much.
Mm-hmm. His voice is so beautiful.
I don't know why Nettie brought up the question whether Bessie could have a little radio over there in her bed. Well, I called over there, they've changed the name. It's the Hilltop or Hill something. Convalescent home now, or center. And the first one I asked, I said I hadn't noticed anybody over there using little radios or anything. Well, she says they do. She says we have a rule against radios with a cord on them. I don't know why. I didn't ask her. But she didn't use the others. Why would Nettie think Bessie couldn't have a radio? You tell me.
She probably just hadn't heard any of them down the hall and thought that they were forbidden. I don't know.
You don't just go around thinking things are forbidden until you try.
Until you try. Well, Nettie's the one, you know, who wouldn't go up and inquire if that was a convalescent home. She said it looked like a motel. And she said she wasn't going up there and ask if that was a convalescent home and be told that it was a motel. She had something to know when a thing looked like the motel. More proper than I think.
We ought to get a hold of Sybil. She might just run over here. Every now and then. She can talk. So to keep us in touch over there. I hate not to be in touch at all.
Yeah, the last time we talked with her, she said, you know, she's polite, said they missed us and we ought to come over.
That's it, yes.
And I think that would be the best thing, just drop by and speak to Sybil. Then she'd come over here.
Well, I thought we might find out what Rick made out of that weekend of his.
Just me. You know, I called my mother on... But it was Thursday night. Because I'd said I'd probably come down. And I thought I ought to let him know. And she said, well, I'll tell you, Dad's off, and he won't be back till Saturday night. He's on the company fishing trip. And I'm staying up to 2 every morning making curtains, but don't you tell him that. I said, well, that's okay, because I was going to stop off and see my sister Jenny and spend a day or two there. And I would get in Saturday night or Sunday. He said, well, that'll be just fine. I shouldn't have taken that as my cue. There would just be so much going on down there, I would just be swept along with it. So I stopped off at Jenny's and spent some of Friday and most of Saturday with her. And she's got 3 little boys. So I repaired tricycles and wagons and played horsey and took them to the beach, got pretty sunburned and tired, and about the most I could make out of that is Jenny just looked at me and said, you know, it's such a pleasure to be able to go to the bathroom by yourself. I would just keep them all tied up while she would run off. So I got on home. Well, I was too exhausted to drive Saturday night, so I went on in Sunday morning. And I guess I just took my time and got in around noon and opened the door. And I figured Dad wouldn't make it to the door because, see, these fishing trips usually left him just sunburned and exhausted. And he's at the door. And he looks just as good as I've ever seen him, and he's just got enough sun to make him look healthy. And he's got on this t-shirt. It's a thin white cotton t-shirt with big red letters that say Florida 73. And it's got this little caricature of a figure with a cap and a cape and this big nose and Budman written on it. Well, that's the Budweiser beer mascot. It's a little emblem. Well, you see, when I grew up, my parents just didn't keep alcohol in the house. It's not that they wouldn't take a drink, they just decided when they have kids there wouldn't be any in the house. And there wasn't. Rubbing alcohol was as strong as it came. Except every year somebody would give Dad a bottle of Old Crow or Old Granddad or something really fine, and it would sit in the closet 5 or 10 years and he'd finally give it away. And I think Mommy went so far as to wanting to sign a teetotal pledge or something with the church, but Dad decided, no, that's too much. And besides, he liked to take a drink now and then at parties and whatnot. Mother stuck to her ginger ale. Well, here I walk in the house, and he's got this Budman t-shirt and this big grin on. And I said, what is that? He says, I got one for your mama, too. He said, but I won't wear it. And I said, oh, come on, model it for me, I'll get a camera. No, 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 I won't do that. It's too tight, it just fits too tight. You see, he's just busting out of that one. I said, well, we'll see about that. I said, we came in, and I guess I hadn't been in the house 10 minutes before I had a screwdriver in my hand, and I was putting up curtain rods. And it struck me as a little odd, you know. I thought, well, I'm just home, and I've only got a day or two, and I'd just like to kind of sit down and talk with my parents. What's changed? The next thing you know, I'm putting up drapes. But first, Dad's got to show me the rug. And see, I've been noticing this all along. Ever since all the kids have moved out of the house, it's gotten plush. I mean, the biggest thing that happened when I was there was we finally got the wooden floor sanded. They decided that we were old enough not to tear them up. So they had them sanded and varnished again. And oh, they're pretty. Of course, they put down a wall-to-wall carpet right after that. But they left the bedrooms without carpet, you know, just throw rugs. Well, they'd gotten a sale at Burdine's for remnant carpets. And Mom couldn't turn it down, so she got one. And had Ray O'Connor, one of our good friends who lays carpet, had him come down. They pulled all the furniture out of the room and put down the mat, and then the rug came out, and it was so torn up they couldn't put it down. So Bernard says, well, come right on out, and you just pick out anything you want. And they picked out this pretty shag carpet, it's kind of a light green, and put it down, and Dad didn't want to move the furniture back. He thought the carpet was too nice, and he just lay down and rolled around the rug. So as soon as I stepped in the door and got around to the bedroom, he said, oh, you take off your shoes. And I said, take off my shoes? Yes, you can't come in the bedroom with your shoes on. Now, I want you to lay down and roll around on the rug. So I took my shoes off, laid down and rolled around on the rug with my dad for a while, with Mom just laughing away at it. And I thought, well, now it's getting to where the house is so comfortable, but it's not livable anymore. And I always had heard that, you know, when the kids get out of the house, then you can buy fine furniture. But I never thought it would happen at my house. And now it's just got this thick rug in the bedroom. And Mom had Luria over. That's her good friend. And she and Luria finished the drapes. And Dad and I put up the curtain rods and got those curtains and those drapes. And they're floor to ceiling. And they're kind of an olive green to match the rug. I stood back and I looked at that bedroom and I thought, well, I'll be damned, but we're in modern age showroom. Those little 9-foot ceilings just go way up there now, and the walls look so bare.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad was just as happy as he could be, and Mom looked out and said, you know, I don't know, it looks awful dark in here, and I just like a bright, sunny room. Dad said, yes, Eva, and what are you going to do to dye now? You just don't have any curtains to dye anymore. You see, she'd always replace curtains in everybody else's room, but she wouldn't do her own. She's always doing for somebody else, you see. And she'd keep dyeing these poor old curtains, and then the sun would fade them out and they'd be streaked. I said, oh, come on, Dick, you just hush up. So the Johnsons came on over, Luria and her husband Carl, and they came on over for dinner that night. And Mom kind of went up and apologized to me and said, I'm sorry, we've got company for dinner and all tonight. I said, well, that's okay, there's not much I can do about it. And I don't mind, I know the Johnsons. Well, for some reason, I figured I could make contact with Carl that night. I don't know why. Now, Carl works for Eastern. He's a foreman, kind of a lead mechanic. And he started with Eastern when Eastern was just starting, and he's a company man. And he had that in common with my dad, because my dad started with Winn-Dixie when it was small, and he's a company man. They put all their time and all their money into the company, and when they go to work and really put their minds to it. So they've always been really good friends, and Carl's the one who got Dad into golf. So he came over, and he was smoking. And he's the only one of the 2-3 couples my parents hang around with now that smokes. And I kind of admire him for it, because everybody tells Carl to quit. And when Carl gets in somebody else's car, nope, you can't smoke in the car, Carl. You make the car smell bad, Carl. But he hadn't given up the habit yet. And Mom had told me before that they'd gotten another car. They'd sold their little VW and gotten a little Ford Ranchero. It's kind of a car pickup. So he had that in the Caprice now. And Carl's been through, 5 or 10 cars in the last few years, and they're always used cars. And they're always in a good deal, and he usually sells them and makes a little money off them. In fact, when he bought the VW, it was one of those deals where it's on television, and it's at a real low price. And it first come, first serve. Well, Carl saw it on TV, and he took off right then to buy it. And they said, oh, no, it's sold. And he said, no, it couldn't be. Nobody could get down here as fast as I did. I want the VW. And they had to pull it out and sell it to him. It was a good little VW. Well, Carl sold the VW and got this Ranchero. And then he bought the Caprice, which is brand new. And Luria had been complaining because it wasn't shiny anymore. Now, this is about a 1971 model car. And Mom said, you know, they take it through those car washes. It has those great big brushes, and that just beats the paint to pieces. But Carl said to Luria, oh, no, it has a dull finish. That's the way it's made. So I kind of kept that in mind, that Carl's a mechanic, but he doesn't seem to really take care of his cars. He just buys them and sells them and runs them hard. He runs 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour down the highway. So at the supper table, I brought up something I'd heard on the radio. I just just threw it out as a comment. I said, you know, I heard where the Zeppelins ran 30 years and carried over a million passengers, but the only casualties was when the Hindenburg blew up. And that just about ended. And Carl picked it up, and he shook his head, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say anything. And I said, and they said they were just as quiet as they could be. You had the motors way in the back, and you couldn't hear them across. Yes, yes. They didn't say anything. And I said, but they flew awful low. I mean, they were slow, but I figured if they flew low, they'd still be popular today. People could sightsee. Carl goes, oh, no. Oh, no. They flew very high. I said, way up there? Yes, way up there. And he wouldn't tell me how high. And my dad said, you know, I saw one flying over Jacksonville once. Yes, they flew down here. But he wouldn't say where. And I thought, here he's been in the airline business for 30 or 35 years, and he's seen all this, and he knows it all, and he won't say a word about it. But what he will tell you is the deal he got on his car. And then it came to me, and this is the first glimpse I ever had of Carl. He's a mechanic, but he looks at the buying and the selling and never the machine. Mm-hmm. And he's so much a wheeler dealer. His daughter had to go off somewhere for a trip, and she needed luggage, so he bought her some luggage at Sears. And she went on a trip and came back. I didn't need the luggage anymore, so he went back to Sears and said, it isn't any good, I don't like it, and got his money back. Well, I kept this mechanic thing in mind, and I used it later on. I went on down to my neighbor, Dudley. And you see, what brought the whole thing on was you'd asked something about the Wankel engine. I've been curious, and I said to Carl, I heard these Wankel engines wear out at 25,000 miles. And he said, oh, yes, those seals go bad in them. They got to take the engine apart and replace them. I don't know if they're any good. He did kind of ran it down, didn't think much of it. I went down to Dudley, who's also a mechanic for Eastern, been with him just as long. I said, Mr. Martin, I hear these old Wankel engines aren't much good. They wear out. Have to replace those seals. And he said, yeah, but you just have to pull the engine apart. That's not too hard to do. Slip those seals in. And I think a lot of people run it down because General Motors got stuck. They were supposed to buy into it, and they didn't. And now they have to develop their own. But he wouldn't say too much more. He was just rather diplomatic about it. He mentioned something about the gas mileage isn't real good, but they might pull that up pretty soon. And then I could see, here were these two men, and they're both mechanics, but Dudley is the kind that does everything around the house, and all his locks work fine in the doors. And when a hurricane comes, he's got all his shutters ready and hanging in the loft, and he knows, has each corner marked, just where it goes and on what side of the house. And I guess it's no problem to him. If the engine wears out, you just pull it apart and repair it. And he's got this old 64 Chevy that's forever having trouble, and he won't sell it. So I said, Dudley, I thought I'd carry on a little more. I'd say, well, those jet engines you work on, they wore out a lot when they first made them, didn't they? And he said, yes. That's all he said. See, Dudley's not a talker. Mrs. Martin does the talking, his wife. He won't talk. But he started to take hold of these jet engines. And I said, but they developed them some. He said, yeah, they would check them every 1,000 hours. I'd say, and then a little more? Yes, and then maybe 2,000. I think some of them run as much as 10,000 hours now. I said, you know, that's remarkable, because when I loaded planes, they used to fly them down from New York, and we'd unload them and set them up again, and they'd fly back to New York. And I just wondered how long that went on. He said, well, you see, we have procedures we go through. Every so many 1,000 hours, we check this or that. And then after so many hours, we put them in the hangar, and they stay there a week, maybe. and they close those big hangar doors, and that air conditioning has a chance to cool the place off finally. And that's when we pull the whole plane down. So I didn't get any more than that because he had to go right on to work then. But as it works out, there it is. All that he knows about the way they do all that work on those jet engines, and Carl's the same way, he knows all that, but they won't give you a fact or a figure. I thought that's remarkable, because I could listen to him talk for hours about those, the way they set those jets up and keep them going.
Mm-hmm.
Lord knows, but they won't say a word. But to go back to that dinner that night, I could feel I was kind of swamped because there were five people, including me, and nobody would really listen. And so when I held the Zeppelins open, before I knew it, my mom was talking to Maria about turkey gravy, and that canceled us out. We got into turkey gravy, and I didn't have a chance with the Zeppelins. But I mentioned this dog I'd seen. I said I saw the biggest dog I'd ever seen. It looked like a small pony, and it was a Great Dane. And Mom picked it up and said, you know, the dog I remember most, we had a lot of dogs when we were little, was this little dog named Smokey. I think it was a little terrier. And I said, we told Daddy we'd wanted one so bad, and he came home, said he couldn't find one. Then he turned around, and there it stuck out of his pocket with his little ears. And we were so pleased. But Grandmother always used to complain, Roy, that was my grandfather, they just looked so much cuter with the tails cut off. You just ought to cut the tail off, Roy. Of course, she never meant it. But one day, Granddaddy picked the dog up and chopped his tail off. And Grandmother was, oh, Roy! And all the kids cried. But she went on and said, you know, Granddaddy should have been a veterinarian, because that's what he did best, and he doctored all the animals around there. And I said, well, he must have known everybody around there. My mother looked at me kind of funny and said, well, of course he did, Rick. He grew up there. There weren't many people there then, you know. Well, I was hoping she'd talk a little bit about what he knew. And I'd say, well, I just figured he could tell you about everyone there. Oh, yes, he could. It's too bad, you know, someone couldn't have gotten to him before he died. He just knew so much, all those people. But, you know, he wasn't home that much. And I tell you, I was glad to see the labor unions come in, like my granddaddy, because they took care of him. And I was glad to see him lose his job in the Depression, because that meant he came home. And I looked at Mom kind of funny, and she said, you see, I hardly knew my daddy when I was little, because he was always out on the railroad. And when the Depression came and he lost a job, that meant he came home, and I was happy. And this is something I never knew. The idea I had of my grandfather was that he was a railroad engineer on diesels, and he rode around with his arm out the window and his cap on and blew the horn, and that's why he was partially deaf. As it turns out, he was never home, and he ran the Savannah Run as a fireman, and he stoked the old steam locomotives and worked his way up to engineer, and lost a job in the Depression and came home to the farm, but later started all over as a fireman and worked back up to engineer and finally into diesels. That many years. They've known all that and didn't say a word to me. And here they grew up in that little community where Granddaddy knew everybody and could talk, and a very well-respected man among everybody. And nobody ever talked to him. They just slipped away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time Mom...
And still
done. Yes. And this is the first time Mom would ever say anything more about him that I'd ever heard. And to this day, she won't talk much about it, that because the Depression and everything made time so hard, they won't want to go back and look at him.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was kind of nice that we sat there at the table and she talked about this, about Granddaddy, and it was kind of personal. and had an audience for once of four people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were relatively silent for a little while, but we got off on the curtains again. I think Mom changed the subject, went on in the curtains. Well, that was the best chance the whole time I was home to get any, to be together with people, because after that my dad had to go to work and that broke things up. But later that evening, you know, one of the things I had in mind before I went home was, well, Dad's a company man, and he'll give everything he's got to the company, and I know he'll just work himself to death because he's been doing it. And now, if it works out, if you don't do the job, they don't care how much service you got, they'll can you, and they've done it. And this has really changed things, and I wanted to see what the effect was. I wanted to see just how Dad was looking at the company now. And I got a little too eager. And of course,
yeah.
I said, well, I've heard about this new warehouse here. I'd like to hear you all talk about it. And Margaret just kind of looks at me kind of funny and goes, well, why? I'm like, oh, well, I'm just interested in keeping up with it, you know. And about all Dad would ever see about the warehouse was, Winn-Dixie's got $1 million Tinker Toy, $1 million Erector set. We see this warehouse has just been the apple of his eye for a long time. Oh, he's so excited when they finally decided to build it in Pompano. They couldn't build it in Miami because the labor unions would go on strike so much they'd never get it built. So they got it built in Pompano, and he used to come home and tell me, Rick, they're going to install a data line from Miami to Pompano. We don't have to worry about the telephone lines going out. They're going to put in our own line. So we can just send all the information up, and we'll have a printer up there, and it'll print it all out. And then they'll have conveyor belts that go off in four directions. They can load four trucks at once and do twice the work that this warehouse does. Well, the way it works with Winn-Dixie is you work on minimal equipment. And this has been keeping Dad tied down for a long time. And now they got the warehouse. Because when the vice president ordered the equipment, you see, he ordered just as little as he could in the conveyor system. It comes with extras. And what happens was, they get this conveyor system with none of the extra devices that make work a little easier. And some of these cases come down the line and they're a little damaged and a can falls out and drops in the roller and jams it. And before they can turn the thing off, 40 cases have tripped over that can and gone over the edge. And usually, it's beer. 40 cases of beer makes an awful puddle. And oh, does it smell. And I said, well, what are they going to do about the warehouse? He says, I don't know. But you know, this data line they put in, they had to put the whole thing in again. Goofed up one of the installations. And he said, here we are, we're selling $1 million worth of groceries a day.
What?
And we've got growing pains so bad it's about to kill us. And they gave me the slowest disk drives for my computers that they make. You see, they have these big disks. It's like tape recorders. And those things have got to move because the computer's just taking information out of them all the time. But they wanted to save money and bought the slowest, cheapest ones they could get. And then they can't understand why Dad can't keep up with the work. And this is what's been eating him and running him down for the last 2 or 3 years, to the point that he was working, say, 30 hours at a stretch sometime. Or they'd call him up at 2 in the morning, the whole thing had broken down, and he'd have to go in and work, and he wouldn't be home again till that night. And when you've been with a company about 30 years, and you're getting to be, well, he's 57, you don't need to work 30 hours at a stretch. And I was always getting a little irritated with him, with the company, because, see, they'd never listened to Dad. The head boss of the data departments would just come down and start trying to run his department. So what happened? They rent their computers from Greyhound Bus Company. Greyhound bought these computers, their IBM computers, and they rent them to Winn-Dixie. So the Winn-Dixie saves money. But IBM has to furnish the maintenance. Well, that works out on this deal. They say, for $400 a month, we'll give you 9 hours from 9 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon of prime time service. We'll guarantee it, parts free. And for 10% more, which would be another $40, you can have 9 more hours. Well, Mr. Finley said, no, that 10% is too much more. Besides, if the machines break down then, they're just not taking care of them right. Well, the operation is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That computer never shuts down. But it does break down. And sure enough, it broke down for 18 hours, none of it under the service time. And they had to go rent another computer at $100 an hour and pay the service charges, and it came out to $2,000.
Oh.
So Dad just doesn't have to say a word. And it finally begins to show up. But they've done a lot of other things. They switch personnel on him and come in and criticize the department, never ask his opinion. And he says, you know, they come in here and they try and run my department, and all they got on their mind is to work till 6 o'clock and then they can go out drinking and carousing around. These are the people that come down on business trips. And you know, when I get in there and go, and I work. And see, they don't ever see when you've got to sweat and pull it all together when something breaks down. Or when you run an operation and somebody leaves some information out, and you've got to start over and lose 4 or 5 hours. They don't see all that. And you see, if it was me, I'd be awful mad and be telling some people off. But Dad hasn't been saying anything. Instead, he's just been counting his time till he can retire. He figures about another 18 months. And I thought, well, by now he's probably to the point, seeing how the company has changed, there's no more company men, there's all just young men pushing and stepping on everybody's toes and trying to get up there. I figured his attitude would have changed. But he surprised me and he said, you know, the way I do, I figure if you're going to work for the man, you get in there and you do the job and you do it as best you can. And here I've put all my time and my money into this company. And that's just what I believe. So, as it turns out, he's got a lot more strength and belief in the company than I have ever seen. But it's a kind of thing that I don't see anywhere else. It's just in these people that started out with the company. And all the old traditions just disappear. But his company fishing trip, he said, this is the first time I've come back and felt wonderful. Now, he usually comes back and he's got a little grin on his lips because he knows some of the juiciest stories and he can't tell them. The way a company fishing trip is, you don't repeat anything that happens. But he used to say, the Davis brothers would go, and they owned the company, and in the middle of a party, somebody would come up a little soused and go, you Austin Davis? Oh, I remember you. I used to work for you. And go out and buy suits and nice clothes and charge it to the Davis brothers. Well, this time they gave them an option. They could play golf or go on a boat trip. So Dad stayed out of the parties, went to bed early, got up late and played golf at 1 p.m. Oh, golf just refreshes him. And the rest of them crowded around all night. I got a little drunk. I went out and got wonderfully seasick. He came back and he wasn't burned up. And he felt fine. And he looked more relaxed than I've ever seen him. And didn't have that little grin on his lips like he usually does. Because he's so full of the juicy stories he can't say. He can just think of them and kind of laugh to himself. And I think he's the one that taught me the idea of an office party, a boat trip. He says you have it, and then it's over, and you don't ever talk about it again. Because the whole idea is that everybody can get all their attentions out and say what they want for a few hours, and then you drop it. And you don't believe anything anybody said, and you don't talk about it again. And these people that come back to work, and they talk it over, they just don't know. And you know, he's had people work for him for 17 years as, say, key punch operators or something like that. And my cousin came down, she works for IBM, and she went, 17 years? She said, you know, in every department I've been in, the personnel turnover is almost complete every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, as it turns out, what's happened is my dad has lost touch with just all the operations that go on, and he admits, I can't run all those machines anymore, and I really don't know what they're doing all the time. But he can get the work done and pay attention to his personnel. And this is kind of part of his company man idea, that he pays a lot of attention to his people. And I'm just waiting for someone to eventually see that that's what keeps that department running. And if they don't start paying attention to their people, it's really going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing he can say. He just has to wait till they see it. And he does. He just waits. And it wears him out. Well, he went to work Monday and came home, and he got home at 4 o'clock, which is what he should... No, he got home at 5, and that's when he should get home. But see, he usually doesn't ever get home till 7:30 or 8. And I walked in, I looked at him, and I go, Mom, Dad's home. And I said, yeah, I asked him if he got fired, but he said, no, they just got done today. They finally got somebody else in there to help him a little bit. So, we had dinner that night. Mom fixed London broil and this nice sauce and everything. And said, now you save room for dessert. Well, now I never was able to see how my parents kind of kidded each other or played along. There was always the kids in the middle, you see. And I never realized just how much of their life we took up.
Mm-hmm.
So Mom said that, and Dad just didn't say anything. He got up all of a sudden, he took his plate over, and he washed it off and shined it and dried it, came back and sat down and folded his hands, rested his chin on it, and just sat there looking as innocent as he could. And Mother said to me, would you look at him? He looks just like a little kid. Oh, don't you look so innocent, Dick. What you want is a piece of pie to fit the size of your plate, don't you? Well, we're just going to have clean plates, and you'll just get a small piece of pie, Dick. And he goes, what? And looked just as innocent again, and he wouldn't crack a smile, and I would just about fall out of my chair laughing. Dick Reynolds, you look just like a little kid over there, Dick. This is the first time I've seen any of this. And then it came to me. Here they are, my dad wearing a Budman t-shirt, and he'd already told me that Mother had learned to make good whiskey sours. And Mother had mentioned that, oh, by the way, old Granddad was on sale at Jerry's Foremost Liquors this weekend. And I just thought I'd drop my teeth. I thought, my God, they're getting liberal. But it wasn't that. Because Dad said to Mom, I said, well, you want to plan a trip up to Grandmother's? We'll take some vacation. And she said, no, I'm getting selfish. I just want to do something with Dick and Eva. I just want to go off with my husband somewhere, and I don't want to go see anybody, and I don't want to do anything for anybody. And that has got to be the most remarkable change I have ever seen in my life. The kids are out of the house, and Mom's going to get selfish for once and pay attention to herself, and they're going to fix the house up and have a whiskey sour and go off on their own. Yeah, I think for the first time I'm beginning to appreciate what a pain in the neck kids can be.
Thanks.
There's Jenny. Rick, you just don't know what pleasure it is to go to the bathroom by yourself. It's getting to where I almost feel like a guest in the house.
My shirt.
The rugs are padded, and I have to take my boots off, you know. I was so proud that I usually had a little manure on my boots or something, make me feel country. I'd go home, and I have to take them off and leave them outside.
And kids think they're so necessary to their parents, and you know, you might find out they get along without you.
It's striking. Oh, my.
Could be that you're a little...
When we went out shopping, I pulled the spark plugs out of my car, and I thought, well, I can make them do a little more, because it's never been hard on plugs. It always ran them clean, but they were worn. Dad said, how many miles you got on them? I said, at least 12,000, more like 15 or 20. He goes, you know, you've got to replace them. They burn out, Rick. I go, I know, but it's been running pretty good. Right, no, let's go out and get some plugs. So we went out to J.B. Hunter's, and it dawned on me, because we stopped at this one store up in Hialeah, a couple miles from where I live. I see there's a J.B. Hunter there, and then there's one way south, and that's the one I'd gone to earlier that day. And it dawned on me, I've lost touch with that city. It's gotten so big, I can't even shop anymore. Because I went out that afternoon to buy a change of oil and oil filter, and I went to one store, and I had everything I wanted, but I didn't know what brand I wanted anymore, and I didn't know if this store, you know, some stores, they sell oil filters, but they just rob you, and I didn't remember what store you're supposed to go to buy the oil or anything. So I shopped around a little bit and wasted my whole afternoon. I forgot that you don't drive at 4 and 5 o'clock south in the expressway because the traffic's bumper to bumper. I got tied up in that. I finally got home, and I was so proud. I said, look, I got my oil for 51 cents. I have to pay 65 cents up in Gainesville. Dad smiled, and Mom laughed and said, yeah, we get 39 cents every 2 weeks. Eagle Army Navy has it on sale every now and then. And it just looked like such a remarkable world when I went out with my dad, because shopping becomes the occasion.
Oh.
And I've forgotten all about that. And now Miami is just flooded with stores. I mean, Gainesville is just barren. They had, like a 2 or 3 mile mall. It was just store after store after store, and they're all just offer all kinds of things. And I walked around, and I saw you could buy just about every kind of replacement part for, you know, things like oil changes and wiper blades and radio antennas for your car that you'd ever want. And I thought, this is amazing. This becomes Friday and Saturday night occasion. And I can remember my dad saying to my mom, well, you want to go shopping tonight? Go looking around? I could never understand, what in the world does he want to do that for? Well, now I go back, and I can see it. Why, that'll just entertain you no end. So you just go and ooh and ah at everything there, and just amazed at how many new products they've got on the market. You just get lost in it. And you develop a little technique, you know, you go, I said, well, you know, theirs is probably pretty good with oil. And Mom said, oh, no, you don't ever buy your oil at theirs, because when they put it on sale, it's out 5 minutes after they put it on sale. Don't ever go to theirs for your oil. And I thought, well, this is amazing. They've just got it all down, how to shop. I don't know if I want to keep up in that world, because it wears you out. It burns an awful lot of gas.
Yeah.
Especially because the car, it's a fairly, the car is about 6 months old. So you always have to park at the far end of the lot, so nobody will park next to you and open the door into the car.
Oh.
What, there's become kind of a standing joke at the house. There's this girl that lives down the street, and she's about a year or two younger than I am. And she'd always been kind of chasing me, you see. I've never been interested. And Mother always keeps saying, this is the fellow that worked for the airlines, Dudley Martin, saying, well, you know, you ought to go down and visit. You know, just keep in touch with your friends. Which I do, because the Martins were always my haven, you know. And around Christmas time, I could always get rum in my eggnog down there. I had to drink straight rum at the house. And Ms. Martin would say, come on down about 5 o'clock and we'll have a little cocktail hour. We'll have a beer or something. I said, great. So, their daughter, Kathy, has been home. She's graduated. And she's working at Birdine. So, Mom said, oh, she's just got some of the cutest outfits, Rick. And she's lost so much weight, and she's been applying for a stewardess job, and she's gotten some second interviews a few times. And I'm just, And Dad comes in, and he hears all this, and he says, yeah, but she still says, hello, Rick. Daddy's got a voice like a foghorn. And that was all my dad said.
Hello, Rick.
Oh, You just broke the whole thing up. And he would see later on in the day, Mom said, Dudley's home. Dad was out in the yard, just out in the front yard near the window, and he could hear us. He said, Dudley's home now. He's going to be going to work pretty soon. You ought to go on down there. About that time, your dad go, hello, Rick.
You have to keep up in a place like that.
You do. You see, I stepped right into the festivities. I didn't have a chance. They just swept me right along. Hi, you're home. We're going to put up curtains. Oh. You know, next thing you knew, I had a screwdriver in my hand. I was tired. I'd been playing with those three kids. You know, it's pick me up and throw me around and run down the beach with them. And I hadn't had so much exercise in ages. I was just exhausted. And then drive home 3 or 4 hours in that traffic. All I wanted to do was take a nap. Here I am putting up these curtains, and I had to hold my arms up over my head, and the blood would run out of them, you know.
Oh, it does bad.
Yeah. And I think the only time I really got, I would have like a few minutes to sit and talk with Mom, and she'd say, well, what are you going to do? And Dad would say, well, what are you going to do? Going into the grocery business? Well, no, I don't know. I'm not worrying about it either.
No, I learned a long time ago that you could get exercise, you see, just holding your hands out.
Yes.
It don't take long for all your muscles to get a part of it. It don't matter much right now, you see.
Yeah.
It don't take long. And then you put your foot out too. I used to do that all the time. Well, Ray, looks like it's fairly a little bit fruitful, your efforts down there.
Yes. I was surprised that I could ever really see Carl or Dudley one.
Yeah.
Because I just never thought I could. I just never even thought about that.
Yes, but you're rushing into it, you see. Mm. You're doing it on short notice. Not alone. And you've got to choose the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Just the first place you come to, you see, won't work.
Mm-hmm.
Except with Everett.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that he saw an awful lot, considering that, as you say, you didn't have a chance to choose the occasion.
Mm-mm. And it's so frustrating to know they can all talk, but together they can't. And if you get together with just your father or your mother, you usually end up cornered. And I think my dad has really got a fine sense of humor. And be very charming with people. And it always surprised me to find that out. And my mother, I used to argue with her a lot when I was in college, and I was feeling very bright at times, and I'd come home and present all these arguments, and she'd say just one or two things, and the whole thing would fall apart, and I would just sit there and go, oh my, how did I overlook that? But I never thought of Mom's being able to talk. I always thought Dad could. Because he could come home and tell me about the office. And as much as he'd have some rough times out there, I know. But he could report and leave it all behind. And this came up. You see, Winn-Dixie's got growing pains. And everything they do the next day is out of date.
Oh.
The machines are already behind. They gave him a bigger computer. And just about the time it got to where he could take up the slack, they put more work on him, and it said it tied me back down again. Well, Mr. Cotton runs the warehouse. Mr. Waldorf is the division manager. He's head of the whole thing in Miami. And he called Cotton in, and he said, look, we're going to a new system of shipping, and this means we're going to have about 10 or 15 more trailers, these big semi things. Cotton said, well, those things are expensive. It'd take me 8 weeks to get them. And Waldorf said, look, we're remodeling stores so fast that the planning division can't keep up with it. So they tell me to hire an architect. Do you know how much it costs to hire an architect to remodel a store? $10,000. Do you know how much it costs to remodel a store? $100,000. Now, it costs you $15 a week when you depreciate it to run those trailers. Now, Mr. Cotton, you get me some trailers. And that's the kind of thing he can bring that home. And it's hilarious. And here Mr. Cotton is on the spot just getting burned. And when Dad tells it, we roll.
Mm-hmm.
And it always amazed me, and he told me one time. He said, when I hit that front step, I leave everything at home behind. I don't care how bad it's been. I leave it behind, I put a smile on my face, and I go up those steps. And when I leave that office, I leave it all behind, and I come home.
Mm-hmm.
And he can, and he'll come home and sit down and turn on the TV, and Mother be cooking dinner. And I used to complain and say, why does he always watch TV? And she said, oh, he doesn't watch TV. It's just a little sound, a little noise, so he can calm down. He's usually asleep. And you look out, and in about 5 minutes, he's asleep. And he'll sleep solid for 20 minutes and get up and not have a bit of a sleepy hangover or anything. And I was just amazed I couldn't do that. I would just have that office running in my mind 24 hours a day. He just puts it all behind.
You would.
Yeah. So I always thought he could talk, but Mom can. But there at the dinner table, she started bringing up all that about Granddaddy. And she knows it, but she won't stop and look at it and tell about it. But she could.
She just might.
She just might. She gets a little more selfish.
Well, I feel easy that then I'd get to it,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't be natural to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's forcing things a little bit.
Yeah.
Curtains and the other sort of talks they do.
They do a lot better on things like Dad telling about a golf game and how Mr. Deloach cussed. He always used to come up to Dot, that's Mr. Deloach's wife. Dot? You know, Leland says things out on that golf course. Why, you should hear some of the things he said. Why, Dot? He curses sometimes. And Mom is forever telling me about Leland, Deloach's escapades with a car, because he's one of these people that knows nothing about a car. He went to drain his oil one time, and he drained his transmission instead. And the car overheated, and so they put it in the shop, and ended up with about a $300 bill, which included a new battery and having the tires rotated. And I don't think they ever got the overheating problem corrected. So that's the kind of thing they always report on, is how Leland gets taken with cars, or how Dot is so frugal with her meals.
Yeah, that's more there. Yeah.
But I suppose if you paid attention, you could get their view, see something.
Sure.
See something.
Well, that's that's one of the things to do, is to see what you make of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it surprised me that, you know, all that talk goes on, it just goes by. No one ever stops to look at it. That's just marvelous when you think about it. They run their friends down. That's just marvelous.
Oh, do they?
Yes. Of course, they don't.
Like we do.
They don't do it right in front of them, you know. But to me, they're always, it's a standing joke that Mrs. Deloach will save yesterday's hot dogs and cut them up and make a sandwich out of them for Leland when he comes home from the office for lunch. Or that Leland's been taken for another $100 or $2 on his car repairs.
But you have to look at it to see
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
any category. Mm-hmm. Run them down.
Yeah. I never could understand why Carl Johnson wouldn't talk about mechanics and why he ran his cars rough. And then I saw it. Because he doesn't look at it as a mechanic. It's how much it cost and what can I get out of it.
Traitor.
Like Cookie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Just like Cookie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That Cookie looks at horses.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Dudley is a mechanic, but he is a mechanic, and everything he does is mechanic-oriented. He's rebuilt the whole house.
Yeah.
Puts super heavy locks on the doors. Keeps his cars running when they shouldn't be running anymore.
Yeah.
And it was a great injury to his pride when he bought a car and found out later it was wrecked.
Mm. Oh.
I remember I went down and looked at the car and I thought, for a used car, that paint looks awful nice. Because usually, you see, if you look at a car at an angle, you can see little tiny, tiny scratches in the paint, you know, or sand or something's grated on. And this didn't have any. I opened the hood and I thought, that engine's awful clean. And I noticed all this new paint and you'd see a little line where it had been welded. I thought, aha. You look some more and you could see where the whole fender had been replaced and part of the frame. I didn't dare say a word. And then after a week or two, it suddenly came out. Why, do you know that car was wrecked that we bought? Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
See, Dudley should have known since he was a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And that got him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't ever talk, as a rule. He just doesn't say a word. See, Mrs. Martin is the one that talks so much.
Well, see, what I was going to say is, you see, we knock around with these people like we did today, and it's we didn't get very far. And we've got all these tapes that say a great deal. Miss Daisy and Miss Mary, Miss Daisy in particular, no one has ever looked at those tapes. And of course, it doesn't hurt to go smell the orange blossoms, but they have those tapes just going to waste in there. And you see, I've never gone visiting with Miss Daisy. I never sat on a porch much. It's all been right here. And she is the one person who will talk in our sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls it our little study. And I don't know. Those things are timeless, you know. I take them when she has all that vigor. The best ones, she had all that vigor. Oh, she'd get up in the morning and work in the garden. And the time they got down there, it'd be the middle of the day for her. And you see all these people getting sick, and she couldn't stand it. And she says, you know, old days, she says, it wasn't like it is now. She says, now you just have all this dying.
That's right.
And you get her when she has so much vigor, that she just rattles the microphone.
Yeah, that's the prize. That's the tape.
And no, you see, I don't know what it is, but the raw experience has such an appeal. Where nothing happens. It looks like somehow or other I'd want it to come to a point. I don't care whether it's on tape or what it is. I worked with that little Three Studies. That was the one where I first got that little insight. And the very first part of it, I was down at the store and Fred had mashed his finger. I went down there hoping to see Mr. Gilbert. I'd missed out on him, you see. Hadn't been there in so long, several weeks, and I was a little chagrined. And I was trying to hit him down the store, and I was down there, and he hadn't showed up. And Fred had I remember he closed that safe door on his finger. So I got in the car and just zipped on up that hill and looked over there, and there's Mr. Gilbert. And I went over there, and he had those branches already cut and laid up against that old tree, the clothesline tree. And he laid it aside. He's going to burn it out, finish burning it out. Now that tree, says it was, they had a wind that other night, and he heard that crash, and he thought it was that tree right down yonder. But he says, "A missus come out here," and she looked around and she says, "Why, Jim, it ain't that tree, it's a clothesline tree." And what was left of the old trunk, you see, had fallen over. Just left a rim, a shell. Well, he said, it's been a nuisance. It's an old sugar.
Maple.
Elm maple, he says, whatever they call it. But he says it has berries on it, and the bird just loves those berries. And when they eat them, he says, they just... The missus puts the laundry out, and they just shit on it. And she can't get the stain out. Well, he says, there's not any worse, I guess, and he is trying to think of something else. Pokeberries. Well, I says, I grow old pokeberries. Well, he cut right through that. He says he did have some down to the point, but he just about cleaned that out. Now that pokeberry is took him up to Georgia with a sassafras. He had farmed over in Liza's field. Finest piece of corn, one of the finest he ever seen. He done that from Ms. Patterson, and he says he didn't think they'd ever get the corn out. He says there was so much growth in there, and Fell's brother, Mr. Patterson's brother, didn't look like he was ever going to get that corn out. Now the sassafras, I forget the connection there. And that takes him back up to Georgia, that little farm he owned up there, he said. And he says, the old folks said, you just take a little of this sassafras tea in the springtime and you won't have any sickness the whole year.
He'd raise his voice on that.
He talked like that. He says, I don't know whether it's so or not. But he said, oh yes, it's the poke bears took him back up there. They love the poke salad up there. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like to mix a little of that with the sassafras. Yes, that's what it was.
Poke salad and sassafras tea.
And he says he had a little farm up there, up past Atlanta, and he says they'd come out there, and them country folks, and dig sassafras. He said one little part of his farm, they call it Sassafras Hill. It had so much sassafras growing on it. He says nobody, they could take all they wanted, and it was never missed. Why, he says some of them sassafras bushes growed big enough for fence posts.
That's right. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, that's,
now, you see, he's reporting. And you can just live in it. And you see, you think, well, he gets back to Georgia. But they all get back to Georgia. It's a creation state. They leave it to come down here and other places. But they always live in Georgia. They see it's already there. It's already there, you see. You can see it. I don't know why you have to go off jogging around, you see. Got all that to work with. And what you want, you see, if you had this sensibility for it, you see, what is the whole thing is, the whole thing is, you see, you have to surface. You can have it, but it won't do you any good. You've got to use it. And if you just complicate yourself, you see, by going at all these loose ends and all directions, you see, you never come to the point of it. And somehow what you want to do is be able to use that tape and put it down. Use the tape.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the talk is best. It's the only place that's a good talk. Otherwise, you're just going to be relating adventures.
I remember, yeah. David. He could work. He knew how to work. Because he was brought up in Georgia. He was a Georgia nigga. That's right.
You can learn it much faster. You can learn it from the tape, and you can learn it so much faster from it. You just live with the tape. And all you got to do is just keep the wax out of your ear. Sprain an ankle.
Now, we had a little excursion today.
Yeah, Debbie.
Miss Mary got took.
No.
We all got took.
That's pretty funny. She got mad. No.
Up there at Orange Hill where they sell orange juice. And a little sign at the corner that says, "See the only red bats in captivity?" Who saw the sign?
I did, I think.
He? She saw the sign.
You seen it, babe?
Yeah.
Huh?
So we all went around the corner and followed the path back and saw the little stand under the orange tree, white with a little orange top and a screen and some hay in there and these two red bars and looked like some droppings. I thought they were bat droppings or something, but no red bats. So we went on around back inside and bought the orange juice and said to the fellow, "You don't have any red bats." And he goes, "Huh?" "This is the sign. You don't have any red bats back there." And he laughed. And they said, "Oh, yes, I do. There's two of them in there. Didn't you see them?" And I went, "Oh, no." He said, "You don't like baseball."
You mean you really hadn't been back there? But I'd never been back there so before. I'd always been meaning to go and had never gone.
We went back on around and looked in there. And Miss Mary looked in there. "Well, I don't see any red bats." I said, "Miss Mary, there's two of them. They're baseball bats. They're red." And she hoofed up a little bit. And she got mad.
"Oh?
Well, that's just plain lying." And these two women stepped out of the bathroom. They go, "What's that?" He said, "There ain't no bats over there. Did you see that?" They said, "No, we thought it was in the bathroom." She came around the corner and we were laughing, just rolling, laughing, and she was just grim-faced and just walking stiff, and "That's just plain lying, that's all that is." We got halfway down the road and that bumblebee that was in the car, and it was big, 1.5, 2 inches long, was on the dash. And Miss Mary saw it and made us pull off the road and drive up the hill by the trailer park and get out of the car.
"Stop the car and get down," she said.
I thought she was kidding. She enjoyed that. I had to flick that poor old bee out of the car and it was half dead and jump on it.
Nobody has said anything about John Davenport, see?
I'd like to read his plays because I think that I was interested in that world of the of that theater group at the University of Tennessee that you were all in. I was fascinated by that, and he wrote the plays for that. Not particularly that they're good plays or not, but it's just that he wrote them for that group, and that must have been really something. You could probably see a little bit in the kind of plays he wrote.
Well, I tell you, I'm sorry, I'm ashamed to say it, but I have no recollection at all of that play. If one of them we were performed, but I think I'd come back to it once I got in there.
It was the one, you know, everybody. It was John's Early Autumn. That was just, seems to me that it was for years in the making. And finally, when it did come off,
now John has never changed. He was, I didn't realize how much of an indoor person he was.
Always. I guess that's the farthest I've ever seen him walk, was that walk we took that night. And then he said the doctor told him he needed to walk. But he never walked. Well, we never was in any place where he, you know, I don't see John in that way. Indoors and comfortable.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. He had some property
always, back when not many people had property.
Mm-hmm.
And now so many people have it, it's not much a distinction, is it? See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah. Is this your light?
Yeah.
That was a real trip. Right?
I even got invited back.
Oh, yeah.
Put a roof on the house.
Yeah, imagine.
Never went back to see him. Miss Mary was so upset. It was really funny because she was taken.
It wasn't funny to her.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't funny at all.
General Nova, around 1600 or 1700. And the end of this session after supper was Rick and Debbie this Wednesday, the 21st of October, of March, 73. John went over around 1600, 1700, and the end of the session after supper with Rick and Debbie this Wednesday, the 21st of March, 73. Channel went over around 1600, 1700, and the end of this session with Rick and Debbie after supper this Wednesday, the 21st of March, 73.